This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Matthew Wells. In this week's programme, it's not all about mobile banking. Africa's post offices are becoming a growing hub for cash distribution across the continent. We'll find out why. And we'll hear about the digital classroom in a box that could help power education in Africa's hard-to-reach schools, even when there's no electricity. But first, predictable and sustainable financing is needed to sustain African Union-led peace operations over the long term, the UN Security Council has heard. That was the clear message conveyed to the Council by Ambassador Tete Antonio, permanent observer of the African Union, or AU. The UN and AU often team up to deploy boots on the ground in hotspots like Darfur, Somalia, Mali, the Central African Republic and Burundi. Jocelyn Sambira has the story.
In a little over a decade, strong cooperation between the AU and the UN on planning and support peace operations has become the norm, according to the Assistant Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations. Mr. El Hassimouani listed the countries where the two organizations have worked together to respond to crises, from Mali to the Central African Republic, Darfur, and Somalia. Africa has been important for peacekeeping, and peacekeeping has been important for Africa, he noted.
9 out of 16 of our peacekeeping missions are deployed in Africa. These missions alone account for 83% of all uniformed personnel and 86% of the financial resources approved for UN peacekeeping missions. As of July 2016, African states represented 20 of the top 30 contributors of uniformed personnel in United Nations peacekeeping operations, and almost 50% of all uniformed peacekeepers come from African Union member states.
Meanwhile, the AU's proven ability to act as a first responder is a critical element of the evolving peace and security architecture, Ambassador Tete Antonio, the permanent observer of the AU to the UN, said. Since the creation of the AU in 2002, the organization has demonstrated a clear comparative advantage in missions where offensive operations are needed and the UN is unable to deploy forces in a timely manner. But the current financial arrangements for AU-led peace operations are neither reliable nor sustainable, he explained.
However, while the AU has demanded experience and political will to deploy rapidly in order to deliver inverse cases, it is unable to sustain such missions over the medium too long term because it lacks sufficient means. For this reason, in 2015, the African Union heads of state and government made a commitment at the 24th ordinary session of the Assembly to finance 25% of the cost of the AU-led peace support operations from AU member states' assessed contributions.
The AU Peace Fund is expected to get $65 million per year from each of the continent's five regions through an importation levy of 0.2% on eligible imports. The provision will increase to $80 million per region by 2020. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
African migrants sent home more than $65 billion last year, a figure that's projected to hit $80 billion by 2020, according to the International Fund for Agricultural Development, IFAD. The UN agency believes the continent's 26,000-plus post offices can serve as an increasingly important channel for loved ones sending cash home, particularly to those living in rural areas. IFAD's brought together representatives from national postal operators, private sector banks, governments and others to look at ways to expand access to basic financial services. Deanne Penn spoke to Pedro de Vasconcelos, coordinator of IFAD's financing facility for remittances, who was in Côte d'Ivoire for the conference.
The remittances and payment systems market has been evolving greatly over the last 5 years. You hear about a story of money being sent through mobile devices. We need to understand that at least half of all the flows of remittances going to Africa go to rural areas. And this is what causes a problem in trying to identify the players that can securely, safely deliver that money. But beyond the money is also the linkages with other financial services to give more options for the families that receive these remittances to do something more than just push it to consumption. And this is where the opportunity for postal networks in Africa to sort of reinvent themselves.
Could you give us an example from the field or tell us how that's working?
Yes, absolutely. In Sierra Leone, the system is including now the possibility for the clients not only to receive remittances, but to save part of it, also to pay bills directly.
Earlier you spoke about other means for sending money, such as mobile services on phones. How is the post office able to compete with these?
Well, the point is, nowadays, you need to do this through partnerships. And I mean, the partnerships is really where the solution lies. The postal networks in Africa still have a competitive advantage, given the infrastructure that they have, the proximity to the people in rural areas. But the beautiful aspect of this is that the technology now is sort of closing those infrastructural gaps that existed.
Is there a difference in the cost that the post office offers?
There's a financial cost and there's the opportunity cost. When you need to go get your money in the next village and you basically need to take a bus, leave whatever activity, leave your kids, that's already an opportunity cost right there. Plus, it of course costs more. The cheapest cost in Africa is at this stage the postal offices. Now, they're not doing such a good job as some major remittance companies that will charge you a premium, obviously. This is where the trend is going. They just need to get better at doing their business.
What's been described as a digital classroom in a box could provide a much-needed boost to rural education across Africa. That's the hope of Alex Masika, head of business development for a Kenyan technology company called Brick, which unveiled its new product called the Kio Kit at the recent ITU Telecom World Conference in Thailand. The kit, an ITU Innovation Award winner, has been specially built for remote areas that don't have regular access to electricity or other basic services. But as Mr. Masika explained to Maximilian Jacobson Gonzalez, it doesn't come cheap.
Brick is a technology company that is based in Nairobi, Kenya. And the innovation that we are showcasing today, courtesy of a communication authority, is a Kio Kit. So basically what it is, it's a digital classroom in a box. So it is a box that comes with 40 tablets in it. It comes with a server. Then it comes with content. It comes with wireless charging. And basically, this product has been built to work in areas with poor infrastructure. So, for example, you don't always need internet to access content. You don't need power. So it supports wireless charging. And then once fully charged, it can run for up to 8 hours without requiring power. So it's been built to work in areas where there's intermittent power, intermittent electricity, because most of the products that are in the market right now really don't cater for most of these areas, especially in Africa, where power and internet is not reliable. So our team thought about it, and we thought about building a solution that is sustainable and that can enable access to education everywhere in the world.
Now, we haven't got the whole thing with us, but I know you're holding part of it. Is that right? So you've got the tablet?
Yeah. So with me, I have a tablet, and we say this tablet is ruggedized. As you can see, it's been built with a hard material. It's water resistant. It's dust proof. It doesn't break easily. You can drop it and it won't break. And these are the things that we have, our UX team has done to make them durable and usable in hardship areas.
And what's it been like being here at ITU Telecom World? You've been showcasing your product here. How's that been going for you?
It's been going very well. I've gotten a lot of interest. I mean, even in countries that I thought this might not be useful to them, they've come to me and they've said this is something that they'd really want to implement. Yeah, people have come to me and they've told me once they get back to their countries, they want us to already start discussions to accelerate this. Because there's also a lot of countries that have tried digital education programs, but they haven't worked because they didn't have the right devices and solutions. So most of the people that have seen this really appreciate it, and they think it's fantastic innovation that they would like to innovate in their countries.
What are the kind of challenges that you faced in terms of the business development of this product?
We are scaling very fast, and right now the biggest challenge is meeting the demand. Then price point. It's not very expensive, but some of our target market, like the low-income schools, really can afford, because this goes for about $5,000, a full box with 40 tablets. Most of the schools that need this actually can't afford. So, you know, they have to look for donors and, you know, it takes time.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matthew Wells.